Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. But let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of my MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP. That's A, M as in Mother's Day, P, at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today. Hello and welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Podcast. I am Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
What up?
Fran, what has been going on with you, man? You had the weekend off. How did you turn up as a father of two?
Chillaxing, man. I stay in my house.
Is that the turn up?
Yeah.
I appreciate it, man.
Stay in my house. Things I have no reason to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's very true. All your fish snacks? Do you Grubhub or order up?
Yeah.
Just get it right to the house.
Yep, send to my house.
No need to go anywhere.
I don't need to leave the house. That's my bubble. I don't need to leave TV. That.
Also, I wanted to let you know, as of today, which is Monday, we are officially a cableless home.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. You made the switch?
I've made the switch. You've converted me
into
me throwing another stone into the dynasty of cable.
Yeah.
And eventually killing what was once something that my mother risked, like, fines and jail time over.
Yeah.
Having to hook up. A guy come in, and it was like liquid. It was like television gold. It was like, if you have cable in your house, you're doing big things.
Yes.
You know, people come in. I remember one time we had a legal cable hookup. The cable people came in and shut the power down on the whole block.
For just you guys?
I don't know if it was just us. And I'll tell you, and I could be wrong, it might have just been a power outage thing, but when those people left, we didn't have cable anymore. Power was out, whole block was out for 2 hours. Those people left. We didn't have a legal cable anymore.
Yeah, popped up on the radar or something.
That's what. But this was early 2000s where it was still people. The cable companies were making buku bucks, and now it's a dying industry.
Yes,
and I contributed to that today by throwing another stone in that awful machine and being officially a streaming household. Fuck cable.
There's no need for it. I told you, man.
Hulu has live sports.
Has everything.
I watched those commercials and I didn't pay it in any mind until you told me.
Yes.
Yes. No. If that they're not just saying that.
No.
You can watch live sports on Hulu. So why do I need cable for?
Just need Wi-Fi. That's all you need.
I told them, come bring me, give me the best Wi-Fi. Yep. And get that cable shit out of my house. Take the boxes with you. Be gone. So thank you, man. I appreciate
it. Yeah,
that.
No problem. Hey, I told you I made the switch a long time ago. I was like, I need cable. I had the cable and then I wasn't even using it.
I had the Comcast Triple Play house phone. I haven't had a house phone since 2005.
Yes.
Nobody has a house phone. Why am I paying, even if it's just $10, why am I paying to have a house phone line? Just use your cell phone. House phones are done, you know? Speaking of dying dynasties and industries.
Mm-hmm.
Fran, I have to show you a picture.
Okay.
Because a tweet resurfaced of this Uber driver who is shocking the world once again. That is Alfonso Jones. Can you tell me who Alfonso Jones looks like?
I did see this.
Yes.
Who does he like? Somebody we know?
No.
Oh, just Michael Jackson?
Yes.
Yeah.
According to Alfonso Jones, Michael Jackson ripped his whole shit off. That's the Thriller album pose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the elbow, white jacket, mm-hmm. light hitting you. I've decided I'm going to play an Alfonso Jones song later on called Your Booty Makes Me Feel Moody.
Mm-hmm.
The vibes are the sound. The sounds are the same. He has a lot of the same noise. Now, this Alfonso Jones album and Thriller came out both in 1982.
Hmm.
So there's a discrepancy. I don't know who came first, because
mm-hmm.
Mike could have came out in February, and then Alfonso Jones hears Thriller, drops this album in, you know, July.
Yeah.
But if it's the other way around, they stole his whole swag.
Hmm. Are you going to play the song? Can I hear the song?
I will be playing it at once we finish the goodbye.
Okay. All right.
So I will be I'll be playing it at some point. But we're going to continue because it's been a rough week for Michael Jackson. I still don't know where people fall on Michael Jackson. Strange guy. But it is official that Leaving Neverland documentary was bullshit.
Okay.
You know? Mm-hmm. Now, if there's other things to condemn Michael Jackson that I'm sure that are out there, because again, he was a strange guy.
What do you mean bullshit? It wasn't true?
Those guys were leeches.
Hmm.
They lied. They made up things. And they tried to profit off of his estate. And when they weren't able to do that, they tried to find another way, which was using the pedophile narrative around Michael Jackson and say, we were molested by Michael Jackson.
Mm.
But what happened was, when Michael Jackson died, one of the main guys in that documentary came out and said, oh, well, if y'all are doing a dance tribute to Michael Jackson, can I be in the dance tribute? And they were like, no, we're going to have like professional people do that. And then Michael Jackson had a Cirque du Soleil show, which, you've never been to Vegas, right?
Mm-mm.
Cirque du Soleil does these incredible shows, dancing and visually, and mm-hmm. they have a Beatles one, and he wanted to be a part of that as well. They said no.
Why?
Because who is he? He's a nope.
He just wanted to be
a dancer, but they're like, we have dance.
I was asking, like, why does he want to be in it? Is what I was.
Because he feels like was connected to Mike and was a part of Mike's history or whatever, and felt like he was more important to the Michael Jackson legacy than he is.
But he was in a documentary saying that he got molested.
Yes.
Okay.
But this all came after all these no's. And he's like, I need money, so I'm going to roll with it. This is how everybody knows I was with Mike. And if they don't want to give me a positive role in his life, I gotta use my history with Michael Jackson in whatever way I can.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole Leaving Neverland documentary produced by Oprah Winfrey, everybody came out and bashed Michael Jackson.
Produced by Oprah Winfrey.
Yes. And again, I am not going to sit here and say Michael Jackson isn't guilty of something. But that thing was bullshit.
Hmm.
So
why did... I was about to go deep into it.
Yeah.
I just don't like the Michael Jackson disrespect, man. I don't like it.
His music is incredible. But this thing I'm seeing right here, this is a big blow. Because Alfonso Jones is an Uber driver. Hmm. So if this dude created the vibe, even if his songs are weird, like... Your Booty Makes Me Feel Moody, that's a weird kind of lyric.
Mm-hmm.
And if Michael Jackson just heard that shit and was like, I'm going to make this more evasive and less straight to the point and say something a little more metaphorical than like, girl, I want to sex you down and rub on your booty.
Mm-hmm.
But he used the same, but he did it in a more subtle way than Alfonso Jones. He plagiarized Alfonso Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And plagiarism is big right now. You know, in the podcasting world, I'm not gonna get involved in that. I don't really, delve into talking shit about other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
But the plagiarism thing is going around rampant, and it's a big topic right now. And if this dude is driving an Uber right now, and Michael Jackson was able to buy monkeys and lions and tigers and bears and live and have a Ferris wheel in his house and travel all over the world, even if his next sound wasn't this guy's sound, Thriller was a big album in the Michael Jackson discography. And he might have just ripped the whole dude's swagger off.
Hmm.
Now, I do find it weird that there's no question somebody ripped off somebody. Because you don't just coincidentally do the white jacket, elbow, pose, and then Michael Jackson did it, or then you did it. It's one of those things happened. He either saw Mike's album cover and then he did it, or Mike saw him do it and then he did it. It's just too close. There's no way around where is similar or whatever. No, those two things are mirrors of each other.
I need to hear the song. I just want to.
Booty Makes You Feel Moody?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Fuck it. We'll play it right now.
Okay.
All right. So again, I'm going to play it as the song heading into the break, just so it's a little more clear, but I'm going to play it off my phone right now just to give you, just to let you get the vibes. This is Booty Make You Feel Moody by Alphonso Jones. Even the laugh, man. It's a little in between talking. That baby. It's too close. Somebody's copying somebody. Come on. I mean, that's all I'm going to give you, that heat.
Okay.
Somebody's copying somebody.
Okay, let me speak on this.
Okay.
I consider myself a Michael Jackson expert.
Sure.
I think he took that from Michael.
You think he took that from Mike?
Yeah, because the whole Mike been doing this since he was a kid.
That's true.
Having that baby voice.
That is a good point.
It's not, I don't think you can go him just coming out of nowhere saying, "Oh, I'm gonna sing this way."
Yeah.
I just don't I don't think so. I think it's no way he took that. The photo album?
Uh-huh.
Nah, man. The curly hair? Nah. No.
It's too similar.
No way.
And
no
you,
way.
You're going to give, because no Mike's the bigger person, you're going to give him the benefit of the doubt before you give it to Alphonso Jones? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's not what I'm saying.
Because that's just not fair. What you're saying is not fair. Because it's possible, but it sounds like what you're saying is Mike was so big that I believe somebody was steal from Mike before Mike was steal from somebody else.
But you see so many people trying to be Mike.
Yes.
Still singing the way he sang. He was a dancer.
This is true. But
can this guy dance?
I don't know.
I need to see if he can dance.
That's not what we're in court for.
But if
right
he can
now.
Dance.
That's
he can
not what we're in court for. Right now we're in court for the white jacket on the elbow and the baby.
If he can bust a moonwalk.
Uh-huh.
If he had footage of him busting a moonwalk back in the 80s or whatever.
But the point is, this is 82. This is a transitional point in Michael Jackson's life. This would be like if a person that's more known for, like, if T-Pain, when he was, like, before he started doing auto-tune, if he, like, let's say we found a bunch of footage of T-Pain had a whole, like, 5 albums where he wasn't doing auto-tune, and then all of a sudden he does I'm In Love With a Stripper, and then we find another song that's like I'm In Love With Jesus using auto-tune, and this guy's like, I started using auto-tune, and I made a song called I'm In Love With Jesus, and then this guy T-Pain heard it, and now all of a sudden all his music is auto-tune music. It sounds like he might have jacked that dude's whole gimmick and used it for something else and then blew up.
Yeah, that's different, though.
Because it's transitional. He was a kid artist, doing little kid songs. Maybe he needed a new, that disco sound and, you know, all that kind of stuff. This was a transitional period in Michael Jackson's life. He's out of the Jackson 5. He's grown.
I think another album. Didn't the album come out before Thriller? I think another album. I think he had an album before Thriller.
I don't know if Off the Wall came out before Thriller. It might have. Thriller came out in 82.
Mm-hmm.
Off the Wall came out in 79.
Told you. He always sang that way.
Yeah, Off the Wall.
That's nothing
off
new.
I take, you know what? Damn. That's a good point.
Pretty Young
off
Thing?
Off the Wall is very disco.
Pretty Young Thing, I think, was an Off the Wall.
I'm pretty sure Off the Wall was, let's see. Let's settle this once and for all. Off the Wall. Well, already I can tell you, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. He was doing all that. Both. Yeah. Alphonso Jones.
Nice try.
He might be driving an Uber for a reason.
That's no way. Come on now.
Yeah.
No.
But it sounds good. So what
it
happened?
Sounds good, yeah.
What sounds good is what happened was Michael Jackson's song came on the radio while this lady was driving in the back of an Uber, and this guy goes, you know, hey, look up my name. I'm Alphonso Jones. You know, Mike stole my whole shit. Here's a photo of me on the. He stole my album cover, and the story grew legs, but this was like 3 years ago. But it popped back up on my feed this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Wait, what?
Nah."
You know, so I'm still gonna play "Booty Makes Me Feel Moody."
Yeah,
just to give him a shout out. He's driving an Uber. Let's drive some streams his way. Maybe get him a couple dollars. But Alphonso Jones, I don't know, man.
Nah.
Don't Stop Till You Get Enough supersedes "Booty Makes You Feel Moody." And Mike was doing all the babies and the keys and the jumps and all, you know.
So you said that he came up. Why is he not? Why doesn't he have any other job in the music industry? Michael,
if you want to make it a conspiracy, I can make it a conspiracy. If Michael Jackson stole your whole shit and he doesn't want you to succeed, you won't succeed in the 80s.
Okay.
So I stole his whole swagger. Don't let him get a platform to continue to succeed, because I don't want him to expose me. So blackball him.
Yeah,
that's possible. But I'm not saying that's what happened. But if you want to put me up against the wall, make me.
But if that's the power you have at his level being a superstar, then hey, I'm sorry.
It is what it is.
Hey,
man. See, and you're contributing to the conglomerate giantness that's going on, where these big guys are feeding on these little guys like Shmime Schmunkies. I'm not going to say their podcast. I don't like to bash people. But because they're giant and huge, hey, man, if they come and feast on you, that's just how that's just the way of the game, man. That's
life
how it goes.
Life is unfair, bro.
Wow. Elitist Fran. Sorry. Wow, you know, big bank take little bank, huh?
That's how it goes, man.
All right, well, fair enough. Well, we're going to leave it at that. What we're going to do is, I didn't know who I was sitting across from. I didn't know I was sitting across from Fran Bloomberg, the billionaire tycoon, just, you know, steal people's shit and flipping and remixing it, and now it's mine. And I did it better, you know?
Hey.
You guys here. This is who you guys appreciate, and he's a star? This is 1% Fran. Fran is capitalism. Run amok. You should be ashamed for standing this person. Franning this person.
Nice.
Yeah. We're going to get these good vibes. Let's take a break real quick. Yes, welcome to another segment of Good Vibes. Let's get some positive energy to start the week off. You start your day off. This might be a weekend. You might be listening to this in 2024. I don't know. Either way, prepare to catch these vibes. Fran, you got something for me?
Yeah. My good vibe this week, for 67 years, Francis Klotz,
okay,
has never had to worry about what to wear.
Okay.
That's because...
Butt naked?
Huh? No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No. 6-7 years old, you better be walking around butt naked. That's because he and his beloved wife, Rosemary, who picks out his dapper clothes, has been wearing matching outfits every day for 67 years of marriage.
Oh, wow. That's, wow.
I applaud that.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I could be married for that long.
67 years? You hope to be alive that long.
That's what I mean. Both. Yeah, just both. You know? That's awesome. I mean,
wow.
I don't know about picking out my clothes.
Yeah, it's longevity.
You know.
Well, me and Sierra stepped out over this weekend, you know, dressed similarly.
Every day? You don't do
that
every day.
No, every day is a commitment. Because sometimes I just want to put on some sweatpants and a t-shirt.
That's what I mean.
We're not going to both have sweatpants and a t-shirt.
Yeah,
that's
but his wife picks the clothes. So he just, that sounds kind of like me.
Yeah.
In the future where I go, I don't care. Just...
Yeah. Listen, the secret to a happy marriage, from what I've been told, is the spouse, see, and these are where these gender normatives kind of cloud the idea of marriage, but there's somebody in charge in every marriage.
Yes,
it's just somebody is the person where, there's a dominant and a submissive.
Mm-hmm.
And can be taken as an extreme, but sometimes there's a person that's just like, whatever you want to do. I don't know. And there's a person that's like, okay, we're going to do this and do that. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's two people and the other person is combative about that, that's not going to work out.
No.
I don't want to do that. I don't like rock climbing. Yeah. I don't want to go do this. That's not going to work out. The best way, so for me, in my situation, I feel like I'm the more submissive person.
Mm-hmm.
And whether I'm jazzed about it or not, I'll just go do it. Because whatever. You know, it's like, whatever. You want to go pick apples? Let's go pick apples. That's great. Well, it'll be fun. I'll have fun once I get there.
Unless it has anything to do with beach and water.
I still do that too.
Nope.
You just, no.
I'm not
put your foot down in that situation, but for the rest you go along.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you gotta have your bugaboos. Some stuff is like, look, I can't back down on this one. I don't like doing it, and I'm not doing. Well, for me, it's roller coasters.
Okay.
Sierra likes roller coasters. I will die before I get on a roller coaster.
Yeah, I know.
It just is not my thing. I don't understand the point of being scared for fun. That's not, you know.
It's a thrill. It's fun.
You know, I'm black in America. I wake up to a thrill. I don't need to get on the roller coaster rides.
It's not the same.
I have to take your word for it because I'll never know.
All right. So the stylish sweethearts first met during high school, and by the time they were both seniors, they were going steady.
Ooh, that's cute.
They only started wearing similar clothes after Rosemary's mother bought them both matching T-shirts, and when they were teens, and their outfits have been. Their mom bought the matching T-shirts when they were teens, and their outfits have been in sync ever since.
Yeah, I can already tell how that happened. Rosemary was like, oh my God, I love this. This is so cute. Let's do this every day. He's like, okay, cool. Yeah, she'll probably do this for like
a week. She's happy. fine.
It'll probably go on for like a week or whatever, and then she'll move on. Nope. 67 years later.
According to Rosemary, Francis never had much talent for matching his own outfits. Mm.
He's just like, fuck it. Yeah. Just, what, dress me.
Yep. She just lays it. She lays it out for me, and I don't have to worry about a thing.
Oh, damn.
Yep. Their outfits aren't the only thing in sync either. The senior couple also sings in perfect harmony for their local church and hospital in Sacramento, California.
Okay, they need to drop an album then.
Yep, Francis and Rosemary are both 87 years old now.
Oh, damn.
And will be celebrating their 68th wedding anniversary. I mean, they damn near been together their whole lives.
What's the wedding... What's the gift you get each other for the 68th anniversary?
The same outfit.
The oxygen tank.
Oh, I thought you were talking about another outfit.
No, I think like, because every year is like a thing. Like wood, metal, flowers. 68 years, that's like box of prunes, Depends. that's the Depends year.
Yeah. We'll be celebrating their 68th wedding anniversary next month. And they assured reporters that their celebration will be just as pitch perfect as their duets. Mm. Now, they have a photo. They have... matching like a sweat jacket.
Yeah,
it's like gray, and then it has black, and then it has the name. They had their last name on it, on like a little patch right here.
Oh, then it got engraved.
Yeah,
chip?
And then they both have purple shirts on, and they both sitting in one of those little like walker things you sit in.
Uh huh.
They both sit in one of those.
Oh, that's fly. That's an album cover. That's an album cover. I need that heat.
So that's beautiful, man. Just,
that's that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Yeah. No. 68 years.
That's a long time, man.
68 years, 87 years. Just I'm assuming, are they Caucasian?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I always get weird when I leery of 80, anybody over 70 that's white. I'm like, you might have been racist at some point. Probably. But I'm sure Rosemary and what?
Francis.
Francis?
Yeah.
I'm sure they weren't. I'm sure they were just great people living their life. And
I don't know.
Let's not ruin the good vibes. We won't even dive into it. They've dressed cute together, and that's just their thing, and that's great. I'm sure there was no vibes, no negative energy. Great. Shout out to them. I hope we get that album soon.
Yeah.
My good vibes this week was actually posted on the Facebook page. I don't know by who, so I'm not going to try to guess. Mm-hmm. But it was a video of a woman who was doing some pretty great things on Skid Row in California. So, so this is... my good vibes this week is about Shirley Raines.
Skid Row. Every time I hear that, I think of Death Row.
Well, Death Row was going on in California.
Yeah,
at the time.
It's just, you know. When I say I think of Tupac, I think of Suge Knight.
Well, this is very the opposite of that.
Can't help it.
Yeah, no, this is not that. So what Shirley Raines does is she offers the homeless community of Skid Row food, showers, and beauty services through her nonprofit Beauty to the Streets.
I like that.
Yeah, it's almost
is that
like
a name?
It's Beauty to the Streets. Like Step Up to the Streets, the movie. It's that. But with a Z for streets. Because this is real.
Just slang?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little Ebonics. It kind of looks like a MySpace name header where you a backwards letter or whatever.
Mm-hmm. The like Z placed at the bottom of the T.
No, she didn't use a little. She didn't use a little Z. She didn't use a little Z. Okay. It was just a regular Z. This is mature shit. It's street and urban, but it's mature.
Is the Z going past the whole bottom of the?
it swirls back and underlines it. She didn't do all that. Shirley Raines has been offering the homeless community of Skid Row a helping hand, dignity, and beauty services for the past 3 years through her nonprofit Beauty to the Streets. According to KABC, the Long Beach native got her start by feeding houseless people with a different nonprofit after going through the pain of losing her child. I'm telling you, man, you find some of your biggest inspirations, and sometimes you find yourself through the darkest times of your life. And this sounds like this might have been a situation for Shirley. It wasn't long until she realized that women in particular were interested in hair and makeup.
So there's all women? They just helping out women?
They might be helping out men too, but from the video I saw, it was all women getting their hair done. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she's not excluding men, but she does hair and makeup. So maybe a dude might want a haircut, but the makeup part is, you know. She basically is glamming and beautifying these women, giving them heels and stuff like that. So it's not, some gay guys or, you know, dudes who like to dress like women down there that can benefit from this as well. But for the most part, her the people that come to her, because it was inspired by people being, because she has like short, she has like the Amber Rose thing, but it's green, you know, and she has piercings and eyeshadow, and women, homeless women would come up to her and be like, oh my God, I love your hair.
Yeah.
I love your perfume that you're wearing. I love your nails, your shoes. And she's like, oh, well, yeah, women still are women.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, even if they're homeless on hard times, every woman wants to be beautiful and look pretty and put on a nice dress or have their eyes look pretty and have somebody give them a nice compliment or, you know, another woman give them a nice compliment and tell them, girl, you're killing that. Look at you in those heels. But, you know, hard times are hard times.
Yeah.
So she's kind of trying to step in and make women feel that again. So she said, of course, makeup is not going to take them off the streets, but it's going to make them feel better. It's a small escape from this terrible reality they're living in. Reigns told the news station this. She also said, they look in the mirror and see something other than homelessness. It just brings them back to who they were. And you did a similar story about that there was a guy building little small houses for people. It's like, it's just something. And you also did another story about a woman who was decorating government housing.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you could come home. Yes. You're in this program that provided you four walls and a roof, but it still just doesn't feel, you don't feel great in this space. So we're going to come in and give you a beautiful couch and give you designed pillows and put some fake trees in your house and really make it feel like a home to make you feel like this is something I need to upkeep and work hard to keep as opposed to just, you know, you're sleeping on the mattress is on the floor in the house. You know, so for this is a little gesture. First, she's like, yes, I can't make them not homeless. But if I instill confidence in them and make them feel good, maybe that gesture will be what makes them get up and I'm going to go get a job today. Or I'm going to call my mom and tell her I'm sorry and try to get my family back or whatever. The small gesture can go a long way. I told you, man, I still think about it. I tell this story. I probably told it like 15 times on this, but I gave this homeless dude a couple years ago. I gave him like $5. And he appreciated that I shook his hand. He was just so thankful to get treated like a person, man. Like, people walk past homeless people every day and just, like, they're not there.
Yeah.
You avoid eye contact because you think they're going to ask you for something because they need something. But to you, that's an inconvenience. It's like, oh, don't ask me for money. I don't want you to even talk to me. And that's the life that these people have to endure, man, being ignored and being looked down upon and be feeling like you're disgusted by them. And, you know, so this woman's like, no, fuck that. We're going to do the opposite of that and make these people feel good about themselves. So Reigns travels from Long Beach to Skid Row every weekend to offer her services. She takes the time to cook for 400 to 600 people every week in her one bedroom apartment, all while working a full time job and being a mother of six. And she lost the child as well.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the most selfless. This is fully selfless. Because it doesn't even, I'm not going to make assumptions, but it doesn't sound like her conditions are the best.
No.
One bedroom apartment with six kids, that's insane. And she still is offering herself to others.
She's better than me, that's for sure.
What? She said, Monday through Friday, someone is saying, get out of the way, you bum. No, you can't have this, you bum. You're a nuisance. And on Saturday, someone is saying, you're important, you're special, Reigns said, explaining what drives her. The reality of Skid Row is that it took a long time to earn that trust. I'm asking someone to close their eyes, lay their head. I didn't even think about this part because these people like have had to break bottles and get off my stuff.
Yeah.
And she's like, lay your head back and expose your neck to me and close your eyes. And you have to trust somebody when you've been through a life, you've been sexually assaulted, who knows what, and you're you know, that's an intimate thing, is washing somebody's hair and doing their makeup and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's an intimate process. So, yeah, I can understand. I didn't even think about that aspect of it. So she says, she also added, it took years of coming back every single Saturday. Reigns noted that her deep connection to serving the people on Skid Row comes from her own hardships and almost being homeless herself. She said, I'm a woman who actually lived this life in the streets, buried a child, went through traumatic relationships, was almost homeless myself, picked myself up, been working in the medical field for 26 years. I'm still very much ghetto, but I love her. But I survived that, Reigns said. I'm able to say, I get it, I understand, but you've got to just get through it. And that's the story. Like I said, she has green Amber Rose hair, lip piercings, and she's just as ghetto as she wants to be, and can still and still is going out there making a difference in the world.
She has six kids.
Six kids.
Wow.
Six kids in a small living space, and where she also cooks to feed 400 to 600 people every week.
Wow.
So shout out to Shirley Raines.
Yeah, shout out to her.
That is
definitely.
I love that line. Like I'm still as ghetto as can be because
we need more people like her.
Yeah, man. Sure. What I was gonna say is when you see people that look like you helping, it's more inspirational than feeling like people are coming down to help you in a superior kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
When you feel, oh, look at these missionaries coming down and feeding these poor little ghetto homeless people. When you see somebody from that community, in that community, helping that community, it's a level of aspiration and motivation that's just different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the Nipsey Hussle situation so tragic.
Yeah.
Because that's what he was doing. And some jealous person killed him. So rest in peace, Nipsey Hussle. I'm not even going to get into it, but that is what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Shirley Raines is doing. She's giving back to her own community, to people that she identifies with because she was almost them.
Yeah.
And that's about the greatest thing you can do. I remember a couple months ago after when the Nipsey Hussle thing happened, I was very much like, well, fuck it. What's the point?
Yeah.
But then when I hear stories like this, it brings me back around. It's like, of course you need to. You just got to do it. Of course you got to help and give back when you can to the people that are in the circumstances that you were a fucking nut hair away from being mm-hmm. in, you know? So shout out to Shirley Raines. Shout out to that fucking dope ass couple who dressed the same and wear in fucking monogrammed sweatshirts or whatever.
Yeah.
That's dope as hell. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break and I'm going to play you guys Alphonso Jones, The Booty, Your Booty Makes Me Moody. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some fucked up shit. So stick around. All right, and we are back. Fran, it is my turn to go first this week. Please prepare yourself. I will be telling the story of Kerry Johnson and the Red Summer of 1919. My sources were Jefferson Marley from the Washington Post and an article by Cheryl Townsend Gilks from the religiousnews.com website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Ben and Kerry Johnson peered out of a second-story window of their brick row house at 2020 G Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. On the sidewalk below, dozens of white men clustered around with glowing street lamps pointing up at them.
Mm.
Trapped and surrounded, the Johnsons feared for their lives.
Is this a black family?
Yes.
Okay.
Mother, father and daughter. Mm. I'll get to the description of them as well. It was the night of Monday, July 21st, 1919, and the city of Washington was engulfed in racial combat. In expectation of trouble, Ben, a 52-year-old African-American man, had obtained a .38 caliber revolver. With his 17-year-old daughter, Carrie, he watched the chaotic scene outside where black residents taking refuge on the roofs of their houses were hurling rocks down at the gathering whites. An African-American musician returning from a late-night gig heard someone shout, "Get the nigger!"
Mm.
A flying brick struck a police officer in the head, dropping him to his knees. Gunshots sounded from the houses across the street. A car full of white men roaring up the alley next to the Johnson's Row House is one of the stories where the gunfire might have come from.
Okay, so who threw the brick?
It was just chaos happening. There was like a race war happening. So they saw a black musician. jumped on him, but there were also police down there, quote unquote, monitoring the situation, but they weren't really doing anything. And a police got hit with a brick. That might have been from a brick coming off of a rooftop.
Yeah, okay.
Because there's right. black people on the roof throwing bricks down at white people on the streets attacking whatever black people they can get their hands on, and police just kind of scattered around, not really doing anything.
Right.
And somebody, one of them got hit with a stray brick.
Should have been doing something.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's 1919, man. They were doing something, letting the white people. Yeah. A car full of white men came roaring down the alley to next to the Johnson's Row House. More gunfire rang out. Two Metropolitan Police patrolmen approached, and bystanders told them the shots had come from the second floor, which is where the Johnsons were. The patrolmen sent for reinforcements. Within minutes, two army trucks spit out 24 armed Marines who surrounded the Row House, ready for orders. This night was just one of the many that took place in the spring to fall months of 1919 all over the United States. 100 summers ago to this, you know, to the date, like to this summer, white Americans violently and industriously and energetically and viciously killed black people in lynchings, riots, and well-organized mass murders. Poet, activist, and NAACP field secretary James Weldon Johnson called this the Red Summer. From April to November 1919, the United States experienced a rolling series of race wars that might be described as neo-Confederate offensives. Riots broke out in at least 26 cities. Lynching spread, and by the year's end, 76 black men would be lynched, the most in a decade. Everywhere, the story was the same. White mobs, often encouraged by newspaper attention, mobilized to attack their African-American neighbors for crimes real and imagined. And listen, I'm not trying to make any parallels to what's going on in the country right now, but history repeats itself.
Yeah.
People are being radicalized and riled up by news stories and videos of things happening and fake stories and all this kind of stuff. So in a sense, history repeats itself. I'm not saying this identical thing is happening, but last week we kind of alluded to our fears of the next election maybe bringing some craziness. And this is like the ultimate, what I'm describing is the worst fear of that. This is the worst possible scenario that we could possibly picture. So let's not let history repeat itself. I'm going to continue my story. In Washington, mobs of white men led by soldiers and sailors who had recently returned from the Great War in Europe, that's World War I, and were living in the Marine barracks on Capitol Hill, began attacking people of color on Saturday, July 19th. Incited, and pay attention to this, incited by sensationalistic, sometimes false stories about black rapists, the soldiers started randomly assaulting men in the Southwest, the black neighborhoods south of the mall. Again, I'm going to say, history repeats itself. Donald Trump is saying people are rapists, some are good people, whatever. And that, we give people too much credit that they can hear something and discern it as, yeah, well, some people are rapists and then they aren't all of, it's like, no, you're saying those people that look like that rape people. Mm-hmm. So fuck them all.
Yeah.
There is, some people can't differentiate. It's like, oh, a Mexican person, they're a rapist. A black person in 1919, they're out here raping people. Well, let's go just beat up a black person. Like,
you
Liam mean Neeson.
You saying putting all of them in the same category just because of one person?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Or because of just stories, random stories. Oh, there was a rape in Wisconsin,
and it was a black guy.
It was a black guy that did it. So black people rape people.
Oh, got you.
This is what stoked the fears and led to the Red Summer in 1919, where white people were like, well, we can't just have these black people out here raping people. Fucking let's gather together and just start beating black people up like Liam Neeson.
So the Red Summer, is that like blood?
Yeah, it was a bloody summer all across the country, 27 cities at least, just little pockets of race wars
in the South.
It's all over. This is Washington D.C. I don't know if
Washington
D.C. has Southern tendencies, I guess, like Maryland, you know. But we're not the South, at least to me. We're not the South. On Sunday, the attack spread to the downtown area along Pennsylvania Avenue. The underpaid police force stood aside, and the mobs were soon joined by women and children shouting encouragement. A black man was beaten outside the White House. Wow. The most secure place in the country. And they were like, oh, that's just what's going on right now, man. I don't know. We're not. That doesn't. That's not an emergency to us. So that's just what's going on. Much to the surprise of white people, black men started fighting back. The nation's capital was also home to hundreds of black soldiers who had served in the separate battalion, a logistical support unit that drove trucks and supplied kitchens.
That was a surprise that they fight back.
Yeah, they were like, "What the fuck are they? Are they hitting us back? What is this? How dare they?" That makes them more mad. Others have fought in the all-black 367th and 369th Infantry Regiments in France. Historian C.R. Gibbs reports that when the city threw a parade for returning veterans in early 1919, these men had been told they could not march. Mm. Having served their country only to be snubbed, they were bitter and bitterly determined to defend their rights. So they went, fought, died for this country, provided services for this country in time of war, and when they came back, they got treated like they would have got treated like any other person that's black in 1919. Mm-hmm. And that would make me feel furious as well.
Yeah.
And that's what made what Muhammad Ali did so incredible, because it's like, I'm not going to go fight in some fucking war when y'all are calling me a nigger and throwing shit at me on the streets, and you want me to go fight for this country?
Yeah.
You know, and people, this is the thing that these are things that need to be addressed in order to be able to move on. You can't just go, well, you know, Barack Obama was elected, so like all that stuff just didn't happen now. Real shit happened, and people were mad and are mad justifiably. There's reasons people are mad. They're not just mad because mad and won't let something go. There were people who fought for this country and died for this country who were told, you can't march alongside these people in this parade, even though you guys did the same thing. That's the history of this country, man. Yeah. That's insane. You think I'm going to sign up? I know you get a Camaro and whatever. You think I'm going to sign up and get a Camaro and fight and almost die for this country, and I come back and you're like, nah, man, you can't represent yourself alongside us. You're different. You don't get to do that. Yeah, it's insane, man. So, and all this shit came to a head in 1919. All these feelings, I fought for this country and I'm treated like shit, and all these fucking fake news stories and all these white people being scared of black people and black people being angry at white people, it all came to a head, and that was the Red Summer of 1919. When the white mobs started to rampage downtown, word spread to North U Street, and black men converged at the intersection of 7th Street and Florida Avenue Northwest, the heart of the African American community. So these white people were not scared. They went right down into these black neighborhoods, and they wanted black people, and they went right to the black people. With concealed guns, knives, and clubs, they defied white police officers who ordered them to disperse. So basically, they were out there to defend their neighborhood from white mobs, and the police were like, "Go back into your houses and let these white mobs come and pick and choose what house they want to go into and gang up on you."
That's crazy.
Don't rally together and fight them back. So disperse.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's
insane. I mean, you can't even... They basically tell you, like, you can't even defend yourself. Just go ahead and...
Yeah, go home and just wild. Let what happened to you happen to you.
Nah.
Yeah.
I'd have put one in them.
Yeah, so that's what, you know... That they didn't do that. And so there was a race
war.
That's
fucked up.
So, yeah, so a race war basically jumped off. The Washington Bee, the city's African-American weekly newspaper, reported that men on bicycles rode from house to house warning that colored householders who roused... They went from house to house warning colored householders who roused themselves to meet the invaders. So, basically, there was dudes on bikes like,
"Wait,
yo, it's going down!
Yeah.
Get your shit! Get your knives! They're coming!"
Yeah.
You know, the British are coming, but it's just white people, you know, so, and they're on bikes, and they've got everybody out of their house. Yo, they're coming. Let's get it.
So they were, like, waiting outside, or they was, like, going, meeting them at a location or something?
No, you've been to D.C., they have those, like, blocks of row houses.
Yeah.
They all came out and just were in the middle of the street, whole neighborhood. And then while the mobs headed their way, so they met head on. Mobs coming, we're here in our neighborhood, we're all together, let's get it. How you want to carry it?
I'd be like, I'll be on the balcony, I'll snipe from here.
Well, there were people on the roofs throwing rocks down. This happened in the last 100 years, man.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like, a lot of people's great-grandparents were involved in this.
That's nuts.
Like, we're not talking about 500 years ago, we're talking about 1919. You know?
It's wild.
Sliced bread was invented shortly after this. You know? So this isn't that long ago. You know, there are not many, and they might not be able to articulate it, but there are people still alive or were still alive within the last 10 years who remember this. You know what I mean?
That's wild,
who remember this being a story told by their mom, like, yeah, man, it was crazy. Like, a police officer hit me in the head with a baton, and I got stoned with a bunch of bricks. Hello, sir.
Ooh.
Yes, Les Green is here. We are recording.
Superstar's here.
Get out.
I know what you're doing.
I'm doing something. Get out of here now. But this was a crazy time, man. And it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure I make that part clear. It's like, this wasn't that long ago.
I mean, okay, so let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
So if you was in this time, what would you do?
Oh, I'd be on the roof.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not getting my hands that dirty. Okay. I'll have 100 bricks. And I'm slinging bricks.
Because I was like, I want to ask you first because I don't want to seem like I'm a bitch or something.
No, no.
Because
I'll
be like,
no.
I don't think I can go down there, bro.
Yeah, man. Because you know, the police might turn on you. Like,
yeah.
They might decide to get involved with you.
Yeah.
They're not going to fight against the white mob, but they might see you getting the best of a white guy. Oh,
yeah.
Tearing his ribs up.
Cracking the back of the head.
Bang! And then now you're on the ground getting stomped out by a bunch of white people because now they're going to see you vulnerable and mob on you, you know? So now I'm going to be up on top of the roof throwing down bricks, buckets of piss, you know, really demoralizing them and hurting them. That's probably the mental warfare aspect they might not have got too deep in. I'm throwing buckets of shit down. I'm really demoralizing them. Like, oh,
I mean, was you saving this up or?
Yeah, for sure. I would assume this has been bubbling for the last couple of months and the word's been spread, so my roof is just filled with 10 buckets of shit.
Like, why is he prepared?
I'm hoarding. Why is he? Whose shit is this? It's mine. I've been ready for this moment for months. I've been prepared. And you all laughed at me, but now who's laughing?
You got the bricks chopped in half so you have more bricks?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. I'm abundance of bricks, abundance of shit is going down. I'm perched on my balcony, ready to go to war, but from a distance. I'm the sniper.
Everybody's out of ammo except you.
Yes, I'm the sniper. And you can steal shit. You know, it's scary. You might just let a shit out in a bucket, throw fresh shit. So you got an infinite ammo.
It's girls, man.
About 10 blocks south, the Johnsons' home on G Street was in a racially mixed neighborhood with a view of the Capitol. A Jewish grocer sold goods on the corner, and an African-American lawyer practiced his trade down the street. Ben Johnson was a laborer and a member of the Masons, the ancient secret society whose members believed in science and racial equality. And I'm not going to get into the Freemasons, which is not the same thing, and the secret society that they are and the things that they do. But if you know, you know. Anyway, around 11 o'clock on that Monday night, a squad of police officers arrived on the Johnsons' home with badges prominently displayed. A couple of detectives went around the house to cover the rear door. With guns drawn, Detectives Pat Grant and Harry Wilson forced the door open and entered. Remember, because all this shit's going on, but they heard gunfire and somebody said it came from the second floor apartment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they were like, okay, I know we're not doing anything right now, but now let's do something. I know we see all these people getting hit and shit, beat up. Fuck that. We heard gunshots from somewhere, didn't really see it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go take care of that.
Yeah.
So they busted in. The 29-year-old Wilson had just made detective 7 months earlier, and he was married with an infant child. As the detectives reached the second floor, Wilson said to his boss, Pat, I am younger than you. Let me pass in front of you. Which is, you know, and this is all according to, you know, stories that are 100 years old and whatever, but apparently this dude was very chivalrous and was like, I'm younger than you, so I don't even know what that means. Like, I can take a bullet better than you,
right,
or I should die before you because I don't know what that means.
Be my guest.
Please, yeah. So he said, Pat, I'm younger than you. Let me pass in front of you. Wilson entered the middle bedroom with another officer and said, there is nobody here. I don't believe. And then Wilson came in and said, let me see. Getting down on his hands and knees to search under the bed. A gunshot flared in the darkness, striking Wilson in his left breast, which is funny to call something on a man, passing through his heart and coming out the right side of his chest.
Dead instantly, I'm sure.
No, he wasn't.
No?
No.
He didn't die?
Mm-mm. Under the bed, Wilson gasped. Under the bed. Other officers rushed into the room firing wildly. So as soon as they heard one shot and the police got shot, they came in the room and it's like 12 cops just shooting into the room. They didn't see where it was from. It was under the bed. So they're in shooting into a seemingly empty room.
That sounds like some fucking John Wick or like Denzel Washington type scene.
Yes, chaos. Except those people are prepared to handle those kind of situations. This was a 52-year-old man and a 17-year-old girl who had 138.
But I mean, they don't know where he is.
This is true. I guess if they wanted to keep the shit going, they could have bust again. But I'm sure the fear of a bunch of shots ringing out, you drop the gun. You're not like, okay, let me wait till I hear the clicks of the guns. They're empty. That. Now I come out and I'm shooting at them now.
Bow, bow. Let them loose. Out of shit.
You gotta stop watching John.
Sure.
Yeah, you gotta stop watching John Wick, man. The world doesn't
That'd
work
be
like
perfect.
This. They're empty. Yep. Ah, jump out slow motion, shoot them in the foot. Yeah.
So I'm guessing. Well, we better go to certain.
Yes. Officers rushed in, started shooting. A woman screamed. More officers arrived with torches, which are, it's 1919. It might actually be torches. I don't know if they had flashlights yet. So they might have actually had like a stick with like cloth that's in kerosene on it. It could possibly be. I don't
for light.
Know.
They use that for light.
For light. Okay. I don't know if they had flashlights in 1919. If I'm wrong, I'll do corrections next week. Somebody let me know when was the flashlight invented. But more officers came with some kind of light supply to light the way. And there was a woman screaming. Oh. They found Carrie Johnson crouched in the corner with a bullet wound in her thigh.
Mm.
Next to her lay a blue steel revolver. Three chambers empty. Johnson. Yeah, because she shot the cop, but then they might have actually shot two bullets out the window. It's possible.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody shot from under the bed.
Yeah. But two chambers were empty from the gun.
From her.
Or three. From her revolver.
Oh, okay.
So I think the cop got shot once, but then there's still two bullets are empty. They also might not have had enough bullets to fill the gun up. It's all kind of possibilities. They don't know where the shots came from. There are reports that the gunshots came from across the street. There are no guaranteed, proven fact that Carrie Johnson or her dad shot out of the window, and that's why the police came to this building. Mm. Somebody said it.
Yeah.
Somebody said the shots came from the second floor, and that's why they came into the situation. So Carrie Johnson was shot in the thigh, and she was in the corner, and next to her lay a blue steel revolver, like I said, with three chambers empty. Ben Johnson emerged from under the bed with a bullet wound in his shoulder.
Mm.
So Ben Johnson was under the bed, and he was protecting his daughter.
How did he get shot?
They came in the room, and how do you not get shot when 12 cops burst into a room and they're all just shooting?
He was under the bed, though.
Well, that's where the guy yelled. The cop that got shot yelled under the bed.
Oh,
so they definitely shot at the bed. At
right.
The very least, they shot at the bed, but they shot everywhere.
He shouldn't even been able to say under the bed. I'm surprised he's still living.
You know, adrenaline's going. These bullets aren't. It's not 2019. It's 1919.
Okay. See,
it might not.
You said heart, so I was like, he has to be dead.
Yeah. Well, no.
Never mind.
The burst of gunshots in the dark had stilled the eagerness of the white men. Several policemen carried Wilson out and laid him in a waiting patrol car that sped off. So that's the cop that got shot. And they put him in a patrol car that sped off, only to slam into a passing fire truck on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Wow.
So this cop got shot. They put him in a car. Car speeds off to go to the hospital. They hit a fire truck. The wounded officer was put into another car.
Wow.
But at the hospital, Wilson was declared dead on arrival.
Okay.
Ben and Carrie Johnson, bloodied but alive, were taken to the city jail.
Hmm.
Both Johnsons were charged with murder.
They took them to the jail?
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, I'm surprised they made it.
That's what I mean.
I'm surprised they didn't take them to an alley and just shoot them. That's crazy. Yeah, that's nuts. So they should be thankful for that. So this kind of has a silver lining. I'll get to it. Or kind of happy ending, kind of. Except it's still 1919 and Jim Crow is applied by Woodrow Wilson and terrible things happen for another fucking 50 years. But this story kind of has a happy ending. Both Johnsons were charged with murder. Charges were subsequently dropped against Ben Johnson, but Carrie Johnson's first trial resulted in a conviction for manslaughter. A second trial was granted and prosecutors dropped all charges after the new judge ruled that that evidence could be entered that the young woman was in terror for her life. Johnson was a hero to many in the black community, along with the others who fought against the attacks by white rioters. So keep in mind, while I'm talking about this guy, this cop Wilson who got shot and all these cops busting into this room, mm-hmm. while this is happening with this 52-year-old man and his daughter, there is race wars all over the streets.
Yeah.
These people have decided to lock themselves in the house. They haven't gone out to fight. They lock themselves in the house and have a gun for protection. And then people burst into their apartment, you know, screaming and look, you know, and they're terrified. So they just thought they had to defend themselves.
They did exactly what they should do.
100%. And that worked in their favor. Somehow they got the only judge that wasn't like, this black person shot a white man?
Yeah.
Kill them. He was like, well, I mean, it was pretty crazy that night, you know, and they were scared for their lives and they defended themselves. Yeah. So charges dropped. So Harry Wilson is remembered in the National Law Enforcement Officer's Memorial in Judiciary Square, a few blocks from where he was shot in July 1919. The memory of Kerry Johnson, however, is vanishingly faint. A 1922 city director indicates that she had a job as a janitor. In 1930, her name did not appear in the census. People believe she may have gotten married and moved away or died. Ben Johnson was also no longer listed. The row house on G Street was demolished in the 1960s to make way for the construction of Interstate 395.
Wow.
Today, on the spot of number 220, where Ben and Carrie Johnson stood their ground, is an office complex that promises its tenants stunning views of the nearby U.S. Capitol. So they tore down that building, which I mean, that should be a monument to me. I mean, that's
yeah.
That whole, if you go to, like, we went to Cork, and Cork was in the middle, they've been in the middle of this Protestants versus Catholic war for like 100 years. Mm-hmm. And you can go on tours, and they have buildings that are 400 years old. They're just houses. They're like, yeah, man, somebody was murdered here. The Protestant Catholic, a car bombing happened here. Mm. But here in the United States, even though we haven't been around that long, it's so, everything has a turnover. Like, how's that neighborhood not preserved? And there's tours, like, there was a race war.
Yeah.
And fucking
so the whole block down the street
from Washington, D.C. Probably not. It's probably new condos up. This story is not a very well-known story.
Right.
Red Summer isn't a fucking movie or some documentary that is well known. This isn't a well known story by people that live in DC right now. Because a lot of people that live in DC are transplants. There's a lot of black people that live in DC that probably, my great grandmother went through that. My mm-hmm. great grandfather was killed during the Red Summer. But a lot of the people like that are buying the new condos and all this kind of stuff in DC, they're transplants from somewhere else looking to get a job in politics. They don't know what the Red Summer is. Mm-hmm. So the things that are American history are being destroyed and not talked about and glossed over and fucking just dismissed. And that house that where that event took place was demolished, and now it's just some office buildings there that are like, you can get rent this for $3,000 a month, and it has a great view of the fucking Washington Monument.
So whatever happened, it don't even matter anymore. It's just
basically, you know, they don't. I didn't hear about the Red Summer in fucking American history class in high school.
No.
Or the fucking Black Wall Street bombings. There's a bunch of stuff that's history, American history, that I've never heard of until I was an adult and had to go look it up on my own. But, you know, that's the way it is, you know? People, the victors write the history books. So whoever, the people that bombed Black Wall Street, quote unquote, who won and destroyed all those people's lives, they get to tell the story. They can tell the story how they want to tell the story. So it is what it is, man.
Yep.
Big bang, take little bang, like Fran says.
You know? Yeah.
So that was my story of Kerry Johnson in the Red Summer of 1919. And any questions, Fran?
How'd you find this story?
That's a good question. Let's see. I honestly don't know. I kind of stumbled across it.
Hmm.
You know? I think I was... Honestly, I couldn't even tell you. I don't even know how. Sometimes I just Google random things and just go. And now, you ever been in just page 6 of something you Googled?
No, maybe that's what I should do.
Yeah, just go deep. I go deep, man. I just keep going. You know, I might look up something broad like, you know, African-American mass murders. And
I go down about six rows. And
through. I'm on page,
I'm try that next
I'm
time.
On page 12
yeah.
of Google.
Because you brought this story from like 18 something. I was like, Jesus.
Yeah, I go.
It was like, what's his name? Like King. What was his name?
Yeah, I know you're talking about the black guy got hung.
No. The Prince guy. He like Prince.
Oh, yeah. I
can't remember his name.
Prince, shit, he was fly.
It was something.
Yeah, he had a cult.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cult was called it.
It was like Tupac. It was something.
No, he looked like Tupac.
Yeah, he looked like Tupac. He looked
like Tupac. It was the,
can't remember his name.
Something cult. Oh, that's going to bother me. Because
it wasn't nothing difficult.
It's got his name in it. It's his name. Damn. I can't think of it right now. But I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Again, that was one thing. I looked up cults and just was deep looking through cults. Yeah, I can't remember the name of that right now. Well, I'll probably blurt it out during your story or something like that. It'll come to me at some point. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, it's Fran's turn to tell you some fucked up shit. So stick around. And we are back. It was the Thug Cult.
Yep.
That we figured it out. It was the Thug Cult, Thug Barem. I would have had, it was like, it was bothering me like how if you have a sneeze, mm-hmm. not remembering that. It was nagging me not remembering that. And it was the Thug Cult, Thug Barem. He looked like Tupac Shakur.
Yeah. I don't think we were going to be able to go to the next segment.
I wouldn't have been able to. I wouldn't have been able to let you finish the story if I wouldn't have been able to have the answer to that question.
That's how I
am. It really was bothering me. Anyway, we figured it out. Fran, the floor is yours. Please take it away.
All right. So did you hack into my phone or at all?
I did not. No.
Okay. So my...
And if I did, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. So my affirmative murder this week is called the Redhead Murders.
Ooh.
I just, when you said red, I was like, wait. I was like, hold up. Then you said something. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, red. Yeah. No, yeah. You thought I said, yeah. Well, that's only happened once. I'm surprised. That's only happened once where we came and brought the same story.
Yeah.
I don't know if we put that episode out. We did, I think.
I don't know. Maybe.
And then we just talked about it together.
That was nuts. That was nuts.
Yeah, one and only time. So, yeah, knock on wood.
So, the Redhead Murders refers to a series of unsolved homicides of redheaded women between October 1978 and the 1980s. Mm. Also, I'm reading a story from Wiki. They have their references and sources there, so okay. I'm not going to sit here and read all these.
Gotcha. But you got it from Wikipedia.
Yes, got it from Wikipedia. Yep. So, believed to have been committed by an unidentified male serial killer. The murders believed to be related have occurred in states including Tennessee, Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia.
Mm. Strong no-fly list on that. A lot of no-flies. A lot of no-flies on that list.
The murders may have continued until 1992. The victims, many of whom have never been identified, were usually women with reddish hair, whose bodies were abandoned along major highways in the United States. Officials believe that the women were likely hitchhiking or may have engaged in prostitution. The hitchhiking. We hear that. It's just
time, man. But my argument to that is, while Uber is a little bit more complicated and you have to, you know, sign up, people are still getting hurt in Uber. So Uber is essentially just just future hitchhiking. It's still hitchhiking, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little more.
Might be a little more dangerous.
Definitely. Because you are not in defense mode at all.
No. Once you at least a child lock or something.
As a man, I'm not. I feel like maybe women go in and like, Brian, are you Brian? Yeah. I've never asked that. It says a black Honda Civic is pulling up. Here's a black Honda Civic. I don't get in. I'm like, are you Cheryl? Mm-hmm. I don't care. You know, and maybe I should, but I feel like most women maybe are on guard even in an Uber.
Yeah.
But when you're hitchhiking, you might go, well, I've heard stories, so I have pepper spray on me. I have a knife in my fist. It just in case they try something. But in an Uber, you get in the Uber, you're texting, you sit down, you got headphones on, your guard is completely down.
Yep.
And sometimes you might not even realize, like, oh, we're not going a direction to my house. And now the doors are locked, like you said, child locks on the inside. Your guard has been down so long, and now you're halfway to wherever they're taking you to do some fucked up shit.
Like, you're sitting there, and then you know your ride's like 10, 15 minutes, and then like 25 minutes.
Yeah, I've been in the car for a while. Yeah, that's a scary feeling.
Yeah. So on February 13th, 1983, the naked body of white female found alongside Route 250 near Littleton in Wetzel County, West Virginia. A pair of senior citizens reported the body, which they originally had thought was a display mannequin.
Mm.
The body had been displayed at the area recently, as snow was on the ground but not on the body.
Oh.
Police said that the tire tracks and footprints nearby indicated that she was likely transported to the site after death from another location.
Yeah.
The examination concluded she had died about 2 days before.
Oh, wow.
And was not a victim of sexual assault. Her cause of death was undetermined. Her hair was auburn color. By 1985, she was linked possibly to another redheaded woman found as homicide victims whose deaths seemed to be related.
Mm.
With an estimated age between 35 and 45, this victim appeared to have been an older than the median for the other women grouped as victims of the serial killer. Her height was estimated at 5 feet 6 inches and weight of 135 pounds. Her eyes were presumed to be brown, although post-mortem changes may have affected eye color.
Mm.
She had two scars, one typical of a C-section, and another one on her index finger. The woman's legs and underarms were shaven, indicating an attention to grooming not characteristic of a transient or hitchhiker.
Oh.
Witnesses described seeing a middle-aged white male, about 5 feet 10 inches, and weighing 185 to 200 pounds. See, how do you figure that shit out just by eyeballing
it? I don't get paid to know that type of shit. That's a talent.
Yeah. So they thought they found him near the area where the body was found. The victim may have been seen alive in Wheeling, West Virginia, as an employee or a customer at a bar. West Virginia authorities are skeptical of whether this victim is related to other victims in the redhead murders.
Because of the age discrepancy and stuff like that?
The hair color, the age, the height.
Oh, because it was like not red. It was kind of red.
Yeah.
Because auburn isn't exactly
It's red. Like, what is it? Like,
it's like a brown. Like a darkish. Like a reddish brown.
Yeah. So on September 16th, 1984, the body of a woman later identified as 28-year-old Lisa Nichols, who also used the last name of Jarvis. I think Jarvis is her...
her husband?
Yeah. She was found alongside Interstate 40 near West Memphis, Arkansas. She was wearing only a sweater. She was found to have been a resident of West Virginia. Authorities were not able to identify and contact her family members for some time, indicating that Nichols was estranged from them. She was identified for nearly a year, not until June 1985, 9 months after she was strangled, she was identified through fingerprints. Nichols is believed to have been a victim in what are known as the redhead murders. Common characteristics are her hair color, reddish or strawberry blonde, and being found along a highway. She was identified by a couple from Florida who had allowed her to stay with them for a period of time.
Mm.
Nichols may have been murdered after leaving a truck stop along the highway and may have attempted to hitchhike. A lot of hitchhiking going on.
Yeah, also, these are some of the ones where I'm really fascinated by. Any kind of people that are all connected by characteristic,
yeah.
There's a lot of psychology in that where yeah. Like maybe a woman made this person feel yep. impotent who had red hair, or their mother had yep. red hair, or it's something.
That's wild, man, yeah. just to think about. You just hate that person, and it's like,
you see anybody
that person
could have like
just dyed her hair red, obviously all of them did, yeah. But you know what I mean?
It
just
that little bit of crazy. A difference. Them just, the only thing they did was have red hair and were in a place where this guy was able to see them.
Yep. So on January 1st, 1985, a bound body of a woman was found near Jellico, Tennessee in Campbell County, down an embankment off the southbound side of Interstate 75. The body was in an advanced state of decomposition. The victim was estimated to have been killed by strangulation and to have been dead 72 hours. She was Caucasian and had shoulder-length, curly red hair. Her age was estimated to be between 17 and 25, but possibly as old as 30. The victim was found clothed in a tan pullover, a shirt and jeans. Her eyes were green. The young woman had freckles over her body and various scars. She was 10 to 12 weeks pregnant when she died.
Yep.
She had partial upper denture holding two false teeth. It is believed that she was between 5 feet 1 and 5 feet 4 inches. When she died, she was 5 foot 1 and 5 feet 4 inches when she died and was approximately 110, 115 pounds. On September 6, 2018, the Shelby County Sheriff's Office announced that the victim had been identified by fingerprints as Tina Marie McKinney. So this was what's that, 1985 to 2018?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's 30 plus. That's 30 plus, yeah.
So they finally identify her by fingerprints. Tina Marie McKinney Farmer of Indiana. She was 21 at the time of her death and was last seen in Indianapolis, Indiana, accompanied by a trucker said to be headed to Kentucky. Mm. Farmer had one daughter.
It makes sense that it would be a trucker with all this hitchhiking and stuff.
Yeah. Farmer had one daughter prior to disappearing in 1984. She was reported missing by her family at the time, yet authorities in Indiana did not enter her into the national database. The state did not have a law common to many other states requiring law enforcement to enter identified victims into the database. On April 3rd, 1985, a skeletonized partial remains of a young girl were discovered about 200 yards of Big Wheel Gap Road, 4 miles southwest of Jaleco?
I don't know what that is.
Jaleco, Tennessee, in Campbell County.
I've never been there.
near a strip mine. She was believed to have been dead between 1 and 4 years. Her age was estimated between 9 and 15, and she was found by a passerby. A cause of death is undetermined, which does not rule out homicide. 32 bones, including her skull, were recovered from the scene. Her skull was complete enough to permit a facial construction attempt. A necklace and bracelet made of plastic buttons were found nearby, as well as a pair of size 15 boots and a few scraps of clothing.
Size 15 boots.
Size 5, sorry.
Oh. What?
Yeah, size 5 boots.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, that makes more sense.
These items may or may not belong to her. Her hair and eye color are unknown. Her age range is below the median for the other victims, but the circumstances of her death may connect her to them.
Yeah, so she just had, that's just another redhead person? Because like 9 to 15, that doesn't sound like, again, that's not
Yeah, but
the
they don't
range.
They don't know though. The hair and eye color is unknown.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, yep. Okay.
Recent forensic analysis of the victim's remains indicated she was not native to the area where she was discovered. The tests showed she was likely born in Florida or Central Texas and had later lived in Midwest Rocky Mountain State, the Southwest or Pacific Coast.
How did they guess that?
I don't know.
Was she tan?
What he found is he found bones. This was all bones.
Yeah, that's crazy.
On March 31st, 1985, the skeletonized body of red-haired female was found in Pleasant View. So now, maybe he said, I can't remember. But the last one was they found bones, but they didn't know the eye color and the hair color.
Yeah.
But this one he found bones, but they didn't know the hair color. So I don't know. So they found another body of a red-haired female was found in Pleasant View, Cheatham County, Tennessee. She was believed to have died 3 to 5 months before due to an unknown cause. However, her case is possibly linked to the redhead murders because her remains were found at the state at the side of Interstate 24 between mile markers 29 and 30.
Mm.
Unlike some of the other victims, she was wearing clothes. She was wearing clothing, a shirt, sweater, pants, and underwear. She was white, between 5 feet and 5 foot 2 inches, tall with an inestimable weight.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Whew. An examination of her teeth showed that the victim had some evidence of crowding and overlapping in her mouth.
Oh, yeah.
This woman was believed to be between ages of 31 and 40 at the time of her death.
That's closer to the other lady.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about the shit they use as far as reconstruction of how a person may look 30 years from?
I mean, if they're doing it in the 80s, I probably, now looking as a person that's in 2019, I probably would have some skepticism. But I mean, 2019, the shit is crazy. So if it's 2018, 2019, like if you're saying that they did this recently,
yeah,
I would say it's possible. I've seen some pretty crazy photos. I did a story about, I think it was called The Boy in the Box. It was a young boy that they found the remains of. And they
the boy in the box.
They believe.
I think
they
I saw. What was that? You remember?
I read the story online, and I told this. That was one of my stories. And they think he got killed at like a Catholic church.
Oh
and,
yeah.
All this kind of stuff. They reconstructed his. Like there's a picture of what they think he looked like. But when they found him, he was just skeletons in a box.
That's what I mean. I wish we can.
But they reconstructed him to look like he had hair and a face and what he looked like. And
I just want to know how accurate it is. I wish we can.
Well, we'll never know.
I know what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I wish we can figure out how
the only way to know is if they reconstructed and identify the kid and somebody has a photo of the kid and see how close it is. I'm sure it's not an exact match, but that's the only way you would know is if somebody is identified using that technology and that person has a photo.
Maybe they tried it already. Maybe they
might have. They
took
might.
From like a baby or something.
These might
post,
be
things. Yeah. Then
waited. These might be things that have that's already crazy. Been figured out.
That's.
But it's pretty incredible if it you know if it's accurate.
That's wild. So on April 1st, 1985, the body of a woman was found in a white Admiral refrigerator. Mm. Admiral is, I did look at it. I was like, what the hell is that?
It's like it's a just, brand.
It's a brand from Whirlpool or something. Mm. So, a body was found in a white Admiral refrigerator in Gray, Knox County, Kentucky. Don't know where that is. In Kentucky somewhere. Alongside Route 25. Her death was by suffocation. The victim had been dead for a few days and was nude except for two distinctive necklace pendants. One of a heart and the other one of a gold-colored eagle. The two pairs of socks, one white and the other white with green and yellow stripes. There were reports that the victim may have been soliciting a ride to North Carolina over CB radio.
Mm. Hitchhiking.
Yeah. CB radio. Is that what truckers use?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But then you could also, at the time, like in the 70s and probably maybe 60s, 70s, 80s, people would have CB radios like in their house.
Just fucking around.
Just fucking around. Talks like how we had like a party line. That was what we had. It was like on a phone. That was them. And then you learn all the trucker speak, like, what's your 20, and what breaker, and all these kind of
CB radio.
Yeah, all that kind of shit. They actually, that's why that show Stranger Things is so good, man. They really find a way of making you feel the nostalgia, even if you weren't in it. Mm. And the kid Dustin was talking to his long-distance girlfriend on a CB radio, but they don't drive trucks, they're kids. But it was a thing. You know, people had CB radios in their house.
That's crazy.
And would just fuck around, like, you know, like chat line.
So 500 people attended the Jane Doe victim's funeral, which was televised.
Wow.
Case was a local sensation in Gray, as the town was a quiet and sleepy place where little out of the ordinary usually happened. That's how shit get swept under the rug or some shit, or just some shit may happen, but it's like, then that time nobody really knows because it don't get spread like that. Because you just hear people that goes, a lot of stuff don't happen here.
Yeah.
Then somebody under the radar fucking taking people out low key.
It's a quiet town, all that kind of stuff. That's why that whole narrative, for the most part, is starting to die down because the internet exists. So
yeah.
There is no quiet. Everything you can find out. I can Google what's going on in Knoxville, Tennessee or whatever, Knox County, Kentucky right now. Yep. And I'll know who was murdered there recently, robberies or whatever. I'll know everything that's going on there.
So the refrigerator had a decal of words Superwoman on the front. Distinguishing features of the body included a number of moles. One on the right side of her neck, near one ankle and below each breast. A yellow stain upper and a scar and other marks on her abdomen, indicating that she had a born child.
See, because that's three times now you mentioned a C-section.
Yeah.
12 weeks pregnant. Yep. This woman's pregnant, like, or she, you said it, she had been pregnant, would you say, just now?
Indicating that she had born a child.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, most women are capable of having children, so I guess that's
One of them were pregnant.
Yeah. One was pregnant, one had a C-section, this one had given birth to a child at some point. I don't know, that might not be a connecting, I don't know. Might be nothing.
Yeah. Her eyes were light brown, her hair was red and nearly a foot long, which fit the pattern of the redhead murders. Mm-hmm. After the autopsy, this victim was determined to be between 24 and 35 years old.
Okay.
The age is about the same.
Yeah.
And approximately 4'9" and 4'11", so she was really short.
Yeah.
It is also possible that she owned a pair of boots found near the refrigerator. Several missing persons have been eliminated as a possible match for the victim. After the case publicized in January 2013, the police received some tips, but it is unknown if they became solid leads. It's crazy. I mean, you've done stories like this where it goes, this murder happened in the 80s or the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And then it resurfaces in 2013 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's like, y'all still getting tips?
People don't give up, man.
That is, That's wild.
Some of this stuff really... I mean, imagine being a person, one, a detective who worked the case and it never got solved. You're not going to let that go. Or you're a person who was on the search team.
Mm-hmm.
These are the kind of people that keep the stories going and keep the talk going and keep looking for clues and keep tips coming and all, and keeping the story alive for a person that might have been in the neighborhood that night and they go, oh, I never heard about this, but I did see a guy that had a car that was blue.
Yeah.
And that one little thing, because it was kept alive all these years and finally got to the person who didn't know they were a crucial witness to the thing. Mm-hmm. They just thought they saw a guy with a scar one night and just were like, whatever. Yeah. And that was the killer.
That's why.
So the stories like that, like unsolved or cold cases that get solved are always incredible to me. Mm. The whole thing of how that fucking the Golden State Killer, the guy that got caught when he's like 80 years old.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's crazy that you keep something going that long and finally find a person, finally get that one clue that puts the whole thing together and you find your man.
Yep. So on October 1st, 2018, the Knox County Sheriff's Office announced this woman had been positively identified as Epsi Regina Black Pilgrim of Western North Carolina. A DNA match was made between her and her grown daughter, who said her mother disappeared when the girl was 6 weeks old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, for... you being a child from that long ago, and then you go, I guess they went, you know, let's DNA test you.
Yeah.
It's like, how did, I was trying to figure out when I read this, I was trying to figure out how do they find you? Like, how does that even?
Well, if they have a suspicion, what happened was they had a suspicion that they had identified who this woman was. So then if they figure out her name, then they look in the database to see if she has any relatives. You want to look for the closest relative to do a DNA test. Because they're just going off of suspicion. They, you know, did all the research, found out who was maybe doing sex work or hitchhiking or whatever in that area who's gone missing in the 70s or 80s or whatever. And they go, well, maybe it was this woman that we keep hearing about. And then you look up Blackwell Pilgrim or whatever in the database. And if whoever pops up, you want it to be a daughter or a son. But if it's a cousin, whoever, you're going to do a DNA test because the DNA will be close. And fortunately for them, they found a woman. They had to go, hey, hello, how are you doing? We heard that your mother disappeared when you were young. Yes, and would you mind? We have a body that we'd like is unidentified. Can we do a DNA test? And they swab her. And if it's confirmed, then boom, that's who our suspicions were right. That was that woman.
Unless they come up with like unidentified.
So
woman.
they find like a list of who they think the woman the deceased person is.
Oh, okay.
Then they find next to kin.
Oh, okay. So that means you just have to go down the list of people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there was somebody that got swabbed and was like, oh, no, your mom's still missing. Right. I don't know. We don't know. It's not her, though.
That's horrible.
That's real horrible to bring up those scars again. Yeah, but, you know, you gotta go down the list.
So on April 14th, 1985, the body of a young white female found in Greensville, Greene County, Tennessee. So Tennessee again.
Mm-hmm.
She was determined to have been killed 3 to 6 weeks before by a severe blunt force trauma and possibly a stab wound. Her body was in an advanced state of decomposition. The police were able to obtain her fingerprints, as well as DNA and dental information. She had been approximately six to eight weeks pregnant shortly before she died, but had a miscarriage before death. She was estimated to be 14 to 20 years old, possibly as old as 25, was approximately 5'4" to 5'6", with a weight to 130 to 140. She had a slight overbite and had some fillings in her teeth, showing that she had dental care in life.
You know what this sounds like to me? And again, this is all we do is speculate on this podcast because this pregnancy thing keeps coming up. This sounds like whoever this person... Is this an unsolved case?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This sounds like whoever this person was, maybe was a hitchhiker as himself or a truck driver,
mm-hmm.
came through these towns, impregnated women, left... Mm. Went on, did his thing, and when he found out that they were pregnant with his kid, killed them, possibly. And in the case of the one woman, she happened to give birth to his kid, and at 6 weeks old, she disappeared. So it's not like she just happened to have a 10-year-old kid or something. She had a newborn child and disappeared 6 weeks old, you know. That's my guess. Because it's come up too many times now where it just doesn't sound like a coincidence.
Also, you had a thing for women with red hair.
Yes. So there's a sexual aspect there. None of them were raped. So maybe he had consensual sex with all these women at some point. Comes back around. They're pregnant. And he lures them in the sense of false security. Oh, that's great. You're going to have my kid or whatever. And then he kills these women.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to have a kid or something. That's my... I'm just speculating. But that pregnancy thing keeps coming up and it's bothering me.
And they've all been... Well, most of them were found on the side of the interstate.
Yeah, on the side of the road.
And one of them was found in the refrigerator, which that one is... It's like...
Wanted to hide her. So I don't know. Yeah, that's weird. That's out of character, but still throwing them away.
Yeah. Same age, same weight except for the 4-foot one, and same height. Yeah, same height and weight.
So hair color.
Yeah.
So he has a type.
Yeah.
You know, but he's not. None of these women, at least for the most part, I'm hearing, none of them were sexually. There was no evidence of sexual assault.
No.
So that's why I'm like, this might have been a handsome 5'10", 185 dude, had sex with these women who were his type, finds out they're pregnant when he comes back in town because he leaves town a lot, you know, tells them, okay, we're going to leave town. I'm going to get you out of here.
I'm going to come back.
Yeah, they probably lead like, you know, these women sound like they were having pretty, none of them sound like he stole them from, you know, they were at college or living some wealthy life. They seem like they were hitchhikers or whatever. And he tells them, you know, all right, we're going to get out of here. You and the kid and... you're gonna have my kid. And life's gonna be great. And he fucking pulls his truck over and kills him. Leaves him on the side of the road.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
It's a good one though. Yeah. So her fingernails had pink polish because she had light. Her fingernails had pink polish because she had light brown to blonde hair with red highlights. Her case was thought to be a possible related to the redhead murders.
Mm.
She just had red highlights in her hair.
Okay.
Authorities hoped in late April 1985 that they would identify her body through fingerprints, but were unsuccessful. Six missing women were ruled out as possible identities of the victim. She was not identified until November 2018.
Damn.
When officials announced that the victim was New Hampshire's native Elizabeth LaMotte. She was 17 at the time of her death. LaMotte had disappeared on April 6, 1984. She was identified through a DNA match from a DNA profile that was obtained from LaMotte's family by New Hampshire police in 2017. She had been staying at a group home in Manchester, New Hampshire, and never returned to her family after gaining furlough.
Furlough?
Furlough.
That's like government assistance.
Yeah, so LaMotte's family was initially asked for a DNA profile to compare to the adult victims of the Bear Brook murders. So I'm guessing they did what we just talked about earlier, just went to a list of people.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bear Brook murders was another series of murders that went happen with some females.
Yep.
An unidentified girlfriend of the suspect, known by the alias of Robert Evans, no relation, was known by the same first name of Elizabeth. Robert Evans was later revealed to be the serial killer, Terry Peter Rasmussen.
Mm.
So they thought this dude had something to do.
So his alias was Bob Evans?
Yeah. So this dude...
Great sausage.
Yeah. Come on, really? Great sausage. So this dude that went by Robert Evans was a guy that... He was a serial killer that went by a whole bunch of aliases.
Yeah.
That was his story. He went by all these alias, different names.
Right.
When he went on his series of killings. So it is believed that most of the victims remain unidentified due to being estranged or not close with existing family members.
Yeah. Street kids.
Yep. They also may not have been natives to the states in which they were found.
Mm-hmm.
In 1985, not long after the Greene County victims was dead, the state of Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Mississippi requested the FBI for assistance with this case. There were inconsistencies among some of the victims and characteristics of the crime scenes, and some were found with and without clothing, and some had sexual encounter before their murders.
Mm.
During the conference, it was stated that 4 victims found in Texas and a victim found in 1981 in Ohio, nicknamed the Buckskin Girl, who was later identified as Marcia King. Buskin girl, the buck skin girl, she was a beautiful girl. I read that story. It's a beautiful girl that got murdered, but she was found with a jacket that was buckskin. That's why they called it buckskin.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Were ruled out in 1985 as a possible victim in the Redhead murders.
Mm.
A possible suspect emerged in the mid-1980s when a 37-year-old trucker attacked and attempted to strangle a woman with reddish hair.
Mm.
But he was later dismissed in this multiple case.
Wow.
Could have been a guy. He had left the victim lying near a highway, presuming she was dead. I mean, how do you
wow.
How do you let this dude go?
That's crazy. They really didn't apply pressure on that one. That's nuts. That's possibly the guy.
Yeah. Another suspect.
So the woman survived?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'd be interested.
Thought she was dead.
I'd be interested to hear her story.
On the side of a highway with red hair.
That's nuts. Oh, no. They brought him in and they just...
Okay.
But you know what that sounds like, though? It sounds like the woman would have had to corroborate with that and say, you know, we got into a fight or whatever, but I don't want to press charges or something, you know? And that would imply that they had a relationship.
Right.
So that doesn't negate my theory. You know, that's crazy.
Mm. So another suspect who was a 32-year-old trucker. I mean, these are both those guys were truckers.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you're going to Texas, Tennessee, coming back around, and in Tennessee again. This is a person that's traveling a route, doing a job, you know.
Another suspect who was a 32-year-old trucker in Pennsylvania was questioned after kidnapping and raping a young woman in the state of Indiana. She managed to escape before more injury. The suspect was also dismissed from the investigation after being questioned by Tennessee police.
Well, I hope he was at least convicted of the rape of the one.
I don't know.
Dismisses just sounds so like, oh, well, it's never mind. Him. You can go.
In 2018, students enrolled in a sociology class at Elizabethton High School studied the case with the aid of their instructor. What school is this?
Some kind of
sounds cool,
true crime school.
Shit.
It might have been like a forensic psychology class or something like that, you know?
The class coined the name Bible Belt Strangler.
Oh.
The class developed the information from an FBI profiler. They described the subject as a white male born between 1936 and 1962, between ages 23 and 49, which is a huge gap,
yeah,
and 1985, who was likely a commercial trucker frequenting Interstate 40. They estimated his height and weight to be 5'9 to 6'2 and 180 to 270 pounds, respectively. His work was likely based in or near the city of Knoxville, Tennessee. And that's just that could possibly be the victim, his height and shit, but this went unsolved.
I mean, it's likely that person was born in 1932. They probably aren't alive anymore.
Yeah, but this dude's a trucker and he got away. I'm sure he's a trucker.
Yeah.
And he has some type of relationship with these women.
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to say for sure. But it sounds like.
In those times, it's been, you read a whole bunch of stories where truckers, and it's just like, they always want to go. So it's like, you don't even.
Yeah. They're gone. You don't know who you're looking for.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that they're all being left on the side of the highway.
Yeah.
Which is the preferred route of truck drivers.
Yeah.
Wide open and, you know, get you from point A to point B fast. So
they had a guy that
was a truck driver.
Yeah.
And assaulted a woman who had red hair.
Yeah. And left her because she thought she was dead. He thought she was dead on
left her on the side of the road. And they're like, well, maybe not him.
So that's the redhead murders. I just thought I did that because these were young, beautiful women.
Yeah.
But that's just rough, though. A lot of them, like, again, it was just a lot of them, they were all had red hair.
Mm-hmm.
They either were pregnant or had a child shortly after they were dead, after they were killed. So, yeah, I just thought...
Shortly before.
Yeah, shortly before. So, I just thought I'd do that, but
yeah,
that was the redhead murders, yeah.
That's interesting, man. That pregnancy thing kept coming up so many times, and, like, that has to be there is possibly some kind of connection.
Yeah.
It's just too many times for it to just be a coincidence.
Yeah. And they all did the facial reconstruction on all of them but one of the victims, how they would look if they were still alive today.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to know how accurate. I can't get over when you see you see it on newspapers now that they'll have somebody was a report of somebody went missing
uh-huh.
and they didn't have their picture of them a child and then how they look like now. Adult. It's like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That is nuts.
Technology's nuts, man. That was interesting, man. I like that one. Yeah, again, there's no riddle. It's summertime. It's chaos right now. It's busy. Busy time. I don't have time for it. Didn't do it. What I will say is to anybody who's interested, Mindhunter season 2 is out. I've not finished season 1, but it's a great show. I'm sure season 2 is great. I've been hearing rumors, whispers of people that it might be kind of about Wayne Williams, possibly the alleged Atlanta child murders suspect and who he's accused of being that person. I think they're touching on that. So I will finish Mindhunters soon and get on to season 2. That's my recommendation. Also, the new Bon Iver album is very weird and trippy and super cool, and I like enjoy that. So I've been listening to that. Those are my two suggestions, friend. You been, you know, watching anything, listening to anything?
We've been watching Warriors.
I heard you talk about this. This is the Cinemax show. Fuck show, right?
Yeah.
Fuck karate?
Yep.
Fucking karate show.
Yeah, I think it's a great show.
Okay. Yeah, somebody suggested Wu Warrior, which I then
Checked that out yet.
Which I then suggested to you.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode. I'm going to continue to watch it, but it wasn't what I thought it was. I thought see, what happens is, it's not a spoiler, but it's kind of a spoiler. So it's great kung fu and martial arts in the show, right? Mm-hmm. And it's this great kind of gang aspect of, like, Chinese-American gangs in San Francisco. And you're like, damn, that's crazy. The triad and that kind of stuff. And then they introduce magic into it. And I didn't know magic wasn't... Yeah, it's like magic worlds and... It gets a little, the CGI is not the most expensive CGI, so it gets a little cheesy looking.
Hmm.
But the fighting is nuts.
Okay.
I would prefer if the show just wasn't magic involved in it, but it's still like, if you enjoy Kung Fu, which we do, I love the Kill Bill movies and just seeing cool fight scenes, and so I enjoy that stuff, but then there's this magic element.
Hmm.
Now, does the show Warrior have a magic element?
No, it is about, they do have gangs, and... Okay. It's kind of like the main guy in it is like him, but it's like you will see little pieces of, if you see any Bruce Lee or Jet Li films, it's kind of in him.
Okay.
But they made it so where it's like it's not copying Bruce Lee or Jet Li.
Gotcha.
So it's just little pieces.
You, like a little nod, a little tip
just
of the hat.
Yeah, just little pieces of him. Little stuff that you see in their old films, he does a little bit, but it's not like...
Somebody do like a woo!
Yeah, it's not like that.
But it's not over the top. But you kind of see it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I got it. So, well, I love Bruce Lee and Jet Li, so I'm sure those are fucking great moves.
Yeah.
I'm also more intrigued that it doesn't have a magic element to it. You know, so...
magic lost me, but I'll still check it out. I like fighting.
The fighting's great.
The first part...
But then somebody would be like, you are the chosen one. You must take the medallion and use it to fight the sensei master. And then they're in like a cloud world.
No, I'm not with it. I'll check it out, but Warriors, the first like 5 minutes... This dude beats up two people. So
that's Wu Warriors. First 5 minutes, it starts off crazy fight scene. I'm like, this shit is crazy. Another fight scene. This shit is crazy. Then he's walking down the street. It's like,
but it's like, is it like? Else. But is are like axes going people through people's heads and heads isn't chopped off?
No heads chopped off, but that's like Warriors. Knives and stuff like
that's
that.
That's Warriors.
Okay, I'll check out Warriors. You said it's on Hulu?
Yes, on Hulu Cinemax.
Okay, yes. Again, I encourage anybody, if you are currently living under the chains and the shackles of cable, free yourself. It's a streaming time. Why would you have Netflix, Hulu, and Disney Plus soon, and you're paying cable? You're never going to watch cable. Hulu has live sports now, so free yourself from the chains and the bondage of cable and become a streaming household like Fran did and then taught me the ways of it, and I am now free from those chains as well.
And we give in a free promo.
Yeah, and that's rare. We don't just do that often.
Also, I wanted to speak on, we don't got to touch on it, but did you hear about the new sketch that came out from that guy Little?
Little?
What's that guy's name? The murderer. The serial killer.
Oh, Samuel Little?
Yeah, him.
He has a sketch out? He has a new sketch.
Out. Yep.
You know, man, I didn't. He has so many of them. And I think what's going to be weird is somebody's going to try to capitalize off that and do an art show or something full of his sketches. Before we go, because I'm going to check that out now that you said that. I was on Netflix yesterday scrolling through the things. They have a show called Happy Jail. I didn't watch it, and I could be wrong about it, but me just seeing it, I was like, this is terrible. So what happened was, probably like 10 years ago, this Chinese flash mob happened from in a prison, mm-hmm. where the prisoners in the jail who, you know, are in prison for crimes or whatever, mm-hmm. did a synchronized dance with like 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. You know, remember flash mobs? And they're all mm-hmm. dancing, doing yeah. the same dance moves. It went viral and they became super famous and all this kind of stuff. And Happy Jail is about, it's a documentary series about the lives of those people in those jails. And they sell merchandise and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, who gets this money? Because these people are in jail.
Yeah.
So is the prison profiting from this? From them going viral and then they still go out and dance? Part of them being in jail is they dance. I'm like, this feels like they might be making these people dance and selling shirts with people's faces on them.
Yeah.
I'm like, do they get the money? Because they're still in jail. Are they really happy to be doing these dances? It felt weird. I guess I'm going to probably have to bring myself to watch it to, because I might be making a huge accusation and I'm wrong.
Oh, you didn't watch it yet?
I didn't watch it because I just, that was the assumption I made. I was like, wait, they're still in jail, but they're happy about it and their people are selling, the jail selling merchandise with the people who are in the flash mob's faces on them. Oh. I'm like, are they giving these people the profits?
I thought it was like they just have a whole bunch of freedom in there. TBD.
I don't know. I haven't watched it. So I guess I'll have to bring myself to watch it because I'm making big accusations. But I'm sure it's phrased as Happy Jail, so I'm sure my questions won't be answered from watching it. They'll make me think it's great, and they love being in jail and dancing. So I'll check it out. I'll report back to you guys and let you know what's going on. Until then, I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in True Crime, Franco Evans. We'll see you guys next week.
Deuces.